Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcasts, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, France 24, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. Nepal experienced massive and violent protests leading to the Prime Minister quitting. The country remains under military law until Saturday. For 2 years, Japan has been releasing treated radioactive wastewater into the Pacific Ocean from the Fukushima nuclear power plant, which was devastated 14 years ago. They hope to have the water cleared by 2051. BRICS member countries recommitted to multilateralism at a recent virtual summit. Spain announced it will impose an arms embargo and other measures on Israel. NHK Japan.
Nepal remains tense amid political turmoil after massive and violent protests ousted the prime minister. The military was deployed on Wednesday to restore security, and streets were deserted. No immediate resolution of the unrest can be seen. Rallies erupted across the country on Monday. 22 people have died in the violence. A government decision to block access to some social media platforms triggered the protests. The measure was partly taken as an anti-cybercrime action. The government later revoked the measure to try to bring the situation under control. But protesters defied a curfew and took to the streets again. Their actions prompted Prime Minister K.P. Sharma Oli to step down. This footage shows his house under attack. Media said elsewhere, several cabinet ministers were evacuated by military helicopters. The military announced on Tuesday it would deploy troops in the capital to maintain security. Reuters news agency says armed soldiers were patrolling the city on Wednesday and streets were calm. Young protesters have been calling for the establishment of a new government and a dissolution of parliament. But the presidential office says ministers will continue their duties on a provisional basis even after the prime minister's resignation. For more, Yamasa Arina and I earlier spoke with our New Delhi correspondent, Matsumoto Yuzuru.
So Yuzuru, even after the prime minister quit, Nepal remains on a knife edge. So what's happening there?
The protests were triggered by the government's move to ban people from using social media. But distrust of politics is deeply rooted, especially among young people. In Nepal, the unemployment rate is over 10%, making it difficult for them to find work, so they are going to work abroad. Despite these facts, politicians and their families are reportedly living in affluence. So this gap upsets ordinary young people. I should say their feeling of dissatisfaction has been building up like magma. The social media ban meant they lost a way to contact friends and family working overseas. That caused them to explode.
Looking ahead, Yuzuru, how do you see this developing?
There is no clear roadmap in sight, since the government's control has been shaken. The military imposed a curfew until early Thursday morning. One of the questions is whether the protests will come to an end. Many young people are hoping for a new government in which their voices will be reflected. Some are hoping that the young mayor of Kathmandu, Barendra Shah, will become the next prime minister. They will be closely watching to see if the new government can implement anti-corruption measures and economics policies such as creating employment. That might ease their anger and dissatisfaction.
It's been 2 years since Japan started releasing treated and diluted water from the crippled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant into the ocean. Over 1 million tons of water has accumulated in the course of the decommissioning process. We look at what's being done about it.
Plant operator Tokyo Electric Power Company has so far conducted 14 rounds of water discharges, totaling more than 109,000 tons. In the central monitoring room at the site, TEPCO employees keep watch to ensure there are no anomalies. At another facility, seawater samples collected from near the plant are analyzed for tritium. It's a radioactive substance that is still present in the treated and diluted water, so it needs to be monitored carefully. According to TEPCO, the concentrations detected so far have been well below safety standards. But despite the progress made, more than 1,000 massive water storage tanks remain, indicating the scale of the task ahead. These tanks currently hold about 1.27 million tons of treated water. TEPCO has stated that the release will continue until 2051, requiring strict safety management for a prolonged period.
Some neighboring countries are resuming imports of seafood from Japan.
The water release prompted countries including China and Russia to restrict imports of Japanese seafood, citing safety concerns. But in June this year, China announced it would resume imports, excluding 10 prefectures such as Fukushima and Tokyo. Exporters need to provide radiation test results and documentation on the origin of their products. According to Japan's Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, it's not yet clear when they will be able to start shipping products to China again.
BRICS member countries have stressed their commitment to maintain multilateralism. They made the pledge at a virtual summit. BRICS members Brazil and India face high tariffs from the administration of U.S. President Donald Trump. Chinese President Xi Jinping, Russian leader Vladimir Putin, and India's External Affairs Minister Subrahmanyam Jaishankar were among the attendees at the meeting convened by Brazil. The South American country currently holds the BRICS presidency. The government says the leaders discuss how to respond to a range of risks in international trade. Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva reportedly referred to what he called tariff blackmail, saying it is being normalized as a tool to conquer markets and interfere in domestic affairs. The Brazilian government says the countries reaffirmed their commitment to preserving multilateralism. The meeting lasted about 1.5 hours.
Spain has announced it will impose an arms embargo and other measures against Israel to protest its military offensive in the Gaza Strip.
Spain's government has decided to take one more step and to put in place with immediate effect 9 additional measures to stop the genocide in Gaza, to prosecute those responsible for the genocide, and to support the Palestinian population.
Prime Minister Sanchez announced on Monday ships carrying fuel to Israeli troops will not be allowed to make port calls in Spain. Sanchez said he hopes to put pressure on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his government. Spain recognized the Palestinian state in May 2024, and other countries have been following suit.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 10 p.m. at 13710 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK may also be found at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. On to France 24. Another 400 UK citizens were arrested and charged with terrorism for carrying signs supporting the group Palestine Action. Then a press review calling France the new Italy for its political instability and soaring debt. The French Prime Minister resigned and Macron picked another conservative in his place. There is a French movement called Block Everything, including using credit cards. This Wednesday was the day calling for a national strike in protest against austerity measures. Figures vary, but most estimates are at least 250,000 protesters, along with the 80,000 special police. There were many clashes around the country and hundreds of arrests. France 24.
Picked up and bundled into vans. In Parliament Square, these peaceful protesters were arrested on terrorism charges, one after the other.
There's a genocide going on, and the international community is doing nothing. This government is complicit in that process, and yet they're the people walking free and arresting people here who are opposed to genocide.
More than 425 arrests were made on Saturday as people protested the Palestine Action ban. Despite only using non-violent civil disobedience tactics, the pro-Palestinian group was designated as a terrorist organization in July 2025, after some of its members sprayed red paint over military aircraft.
We need to change the law. It's ridiculous. We're called terrorists, and it's absolutely stupid and ridiculous.
Protesters are taught to go limp when arrested, so they have to be carried off by several police officers. They also strategically withhold information in order to slow down police processing times. Organisers say that Saturday's mass arrests demonstrate the impracticality of the ban and denounce how wasteful it is of police resources.
I'm here for the second time as well. I'm here because for the last 2 years we've stood by while 20,000 and more children have been murdered by the Israeli state, using weapons that we provide as well.
The ban is the latest in a series of government measures criminalising protest in the UK, condemned by civil rights groups and the United Nations.
You have this article from the Daily Telegraph today, which calls France the new Italy. Political instability, soaring debt, public discontentment. France has become the Italy of Europe, at least according to this paper, while Italy's Giorgia Meloni is now looking at 3 years in office. Emmanuel Macron has lost his sixth prime minister, it says. And France itself, much like Italy back in 2011 when it was on the brink of a sovereign debt crisis. But in that case, Italy was able to pull itself back thanks to painful austerity, while France today could face itself, find itself paying more money to borrow, more to borrow money than Italy. And maybe a little bit of schadenfreude from the Italian papers, Stuart, here. You have a fiasco, you have chaos on many of the papers here. You also have this paper here, which calls Emmanuel Macron the zombie of Europe. How times have changed.
Yeah, they certainly have.
Here in France, a lot of reactions there to the latest head of the French government.
Yeah, most papers reacting to their new prime minister. On the left of the political spectrum, they're also going with sporty metaphors. Libération here talking about Macron on the defence and adds that on ne change pas une équipe qui perd, you don't change a losing team. The paper says that by naming Le Cornu as PM, Macron has confirmed that he is incapable of looking to his left, regardless of everything happening around him. Now, L'Humanité here is headlining with a Le Cornu on a tinderbox, also referencing the 10th of September Bleu Contou movement, Block Everything on their front page there. It says that the outrageous nomination of Le Cornu as prime minister is another right-wing escalation and will be oil on the flames of today's strikes.
This restaurant owner will set her tables on Wednesday, but she's determined to show her solidarity with French protesters by refusing a certain means of payment.
I don't think we'll close, but we might stop taking cards on that day.
She plans to participate in a credit card strike to deprive banks of the commission fees they receive on each payment. It would be impossible for her to close for the day.
It's very complicated to make ends meet each month. It's extremely difficult.
Calls to put pressure on banks have multiplied on social media. In some restaurants, customers will be rewarded with discounts. Here, they'll get 10% off on cash payments. At this protest in Nantes, volunteers distributed leaflets. They aim to inform the French public about the different courses of action they can take.
I say we need to make a change because we can't survive financially. It's hard to make ends meet. By the 15th, we have nothing left.
Many here already say that they will come out to protest Wednesday. But the extent of the mobilization is still unclear.
And already, indeed, Emily, France bracing for a day of disruption and protest. What are the papers saying about that?
Yeah, the French press is in overtime this morning. Let's look again at Aujourd'hui en France. They have this article here discussing the strikes, a big blur around the strike movement. It talks about the uncertainty surrounding the event. It says that although calls for a general strike have been getting louder on social media, it's difficult to tell just what today will look like. And confusion is something that's coming back a lot in the French press today. La Croix has this article today. It talks about the unknowns of a diverse movement. The article looks at the origins of the movement online from what it calls a nebulous group, which has since spread to mainstream politics, most notably the left side of it. Le Monde also has this article here today. It's a column by a historian. He says that the aim of September 10th is not to topple capitalism, but to make it less cruel. He looks at how the movement became so popular online. According to him, he puts it down to a difficult financial situation and a fear of the future.
Answering calls to block everything, tens of thousands of people poured into the streets of France on Wednesday to pile pressure on the government. From Paris to Lyon to Marseille, protesters expressed a wide array of grievances, including anger at budget cuts, austerity measures, and broader inequality.
The government is telling us that the national debt is catastrophic and that we are forced to make sacrifices. But it's always the working class, social services, and the youth that have to pay, while the same people keep getting richer. We can't accept that.
After a fairly peaceful start to the day, tensions escalated in the afternoon as police clashed with protesters, firing tear gas and charging crowds in order to disperse them. Hundreds of arrests were made nationwide, with the Interior Minister blaming the violence on groups of left-wing radicals. Much of the anger was directed at Emmanuel Macron's latest prime minister appointment, making it a baptism by fire for Sébastien Lecornu on his first day in office.
We've already changed prime ministers from new governments, voted on motions of no confidence. It's not the first time. But the reality is that Macron quickly appointed a new prime minister, and we know that the same policies will be implemented, the same austerity policies.
The Block Everything movement gained momentum across social media this summer after former Prime Minister François Bayrou announced a series of public spending cuts. And while Wednesday's turnout fell short of expectations, the movement could yet grow in size, as several unions who didn't join the protests are now calling for another nationwide day of demonstrations next week.
Those press reviews and reports were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, and most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the Shortwave Report or could help support this show, like a subscriber in Central California does, PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Your donations are essential for this weekly production and distribution of this show, which is supplied without cost to more than 100 radio stations across the globe. And if you're listening on a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. An update on the Freedom Flotilla heading to bring emergency aid to Palestine, which was bombed by a drone this week and then again the next day. No one was hurt. The United Nations General Assembly will convene in Switzerland following the U.S. blocking of a visa for the Palestinian president. A bit more about the arrest in the U.K. for carrying signs saying that they support Palestine action. The United States is deploying 10 F-35 fighter jets to Puerto Rico as the U.S. threatens Latin America. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The Gaza-bound Freedom Flotilla boat was caught fire after a drone attack off the coast of North Africa. The flotilla's Portuguese-flagged ship, Family, with Greta Thunberg and steering committee members of the group, was hit in a drone strike at around 12 midnight UK time last night. According to activist Yasmin Akar, the Family boat has been attacked. A drone came right above it, released a bomb, and it exploded and the boat was on fire. Ms. Akar said that everyone on the boat is okay. The fire has been put out. Yasmin Akar labeled the drone strike an attack against Gaza. They have bombed a boat, she said, with civilians on it in Tunisian international waters. The Global Sumud Flotilla, organizing the activists' journey to the Middle East, said in a statement, "The Global Sumud Flotilla confirms that one of the main boats, known as the Family Boat, that was carrying GSF steering committee members, was struck by what is suspected to be a drone. The boat was under the Portuguese flag, and all passengers and crew are safe. Acts of aggression against the boat are aimed at intimidating and derailing our mission, and that will not deter us. Our peaceful mission is to break the siege of Gaza and stand in solidarity with its people, and continues with determination and resolve." Another crew member, Ahmed Eldin, said that the mission was to stop and prevent Israel from committing crimes of genocide in Gaza. His statement came mere hours after the British government claimed that the Jewish state was not carrying out a genocide. In one of David Lammy's final acts as Foreign Secretary of the UK, the new Deputy Prime Minister confirmed to the International Development Committee last week, "Crime of genocide occurs only when there is specific intent to destroy or whole in part a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group. The UK government has not concluded that Israel is acting with intent." And he added, "To date, the ICJ, the International Criminal Court of Justice, has neither found that Israel has breached its obligations under the Geneva Convention, nor ruled on the plausibility of Israel committing genocide." The fleet left Barcelona, Spain, just days ago as part of the largest solidarity mission in history to break the blockade of Gaza. The United Nations General Assembly will convene its September session in Geneva in just a couple of weeks instead of New York, following the United States' refusal to grant entry visas to Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and dozens of senior officials. The relocation marks a rare institutional challenge to the host nation and reflects mounting global frustration over Washington's obstruction of Palestinian participation amid Israel's ongoing genocidal war in Gaza. The U.S. State Department justified the visa denial on grounds of national security, accusing the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinian Liberation Organization, the PLO, of undermining peace efforts through legal appeals to the International Criminal Court and the International Court of Justice. These appeals include formal charges of genocide and apartheid against Israel, claims that the United States argue breach diplomatic norms, and politics of international legal reforms. The decision affects approximately 80 Palestinian officials, although the Palestinian mission to the UN in New York will continue operating under a limited waiver. The move has drawn sharp criticism from legal experts and international diplomats who say that it violates the 1947 UN Headquarters Agreement, which obliges the host country, in this case the United States, to facilitate access for all accredited delegations. The United States now denying entry to Palestinian delegations, including the president of the Palestinian Authority. European leaders have also condemned this U.S. decision of banning the Palestinian representation. Spain's prime minister described the move as unjust. France has reaffirmed that UN platforms must remain accessible to all recognized delegations. President Abbas is expected to address the assembly in Geneva, where he will call for international protection, recognition of Palestinian sovereignty, and accountability for war crimes. The Geneva session is expected to amplify calls for action under the Uniting for Peace resolution, which empowers the UN General Assembly to recommend collective measures when the Security Council is unable to act due to political obstruction or lack of consensus. The United States has vetoed every resolution coming up on Gaza and the Palestinian question at the Security Council over these past 2 years. The UK's Home Office has reported that the British police have arrested a record number of people since January on terrorism-related charges, with pro-Palestinian supporters forming the majority of the arrestees. The office reported the figure earlier this week, noting that the police had nabbed at least 1,339 people during the period, acting on the country's so-called Terrorism Act 2000. According to the report, most of those apprehended were rounded up while holding pro-Palestinian signs saying, "I'm against genocide, I support Palestine action." Several massive protests erupt across the country after it made the Palestine action illegal in July, cracking down on the pro-Palestinian Direct Action Group almost 5 years into its formation. Upon its foundation, the group began staging daring acts of protest against the country's hosting chapters of Israel arms manufacturers and assisting the Israeli regime's deadly atrocities. The U.S. administration of Donald Trump has ordered the deployment of 10 F-35 fighters to Puerto Rico as the United States threatens to carry out more strikes in Latin America under the guise of the war on drugs. Last week, the U.S. bombed a boat killing 13 people off the coast of Venezuela. The Marines and Navy say they were carrying out military exercises in Puerto Rico, including amphibious landing exercises. This comes as CNN is reporting that Trump is considering carrying out strikes against drug cartels inside Venezuela. Over the weekend, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro warned that the United States should not take any military action. He said, "The government of the United States should abandon its plan to violently attack our country and do regime change in Venezuela and in all of Latin America and the Caribbean. They must respect sovereignty, the right to peace, and to independence." Vice President J.D. Vance dismissed the accusations that the recent attack on a Venezuelan boat may have been a war crime if civilians were on board. Vance wrote on X, "I don't give a shit what you call it." Republican Senator Rand Paul criticized Vance's statement, saying, "What a despicable and thoughtless sentiment. It is to glorify killing someone without a trial."
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu most of the time, but there are no podcasts. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury and staying in a house connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.